Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello Rank Squad and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. Back after Wednesday's Champions League action. Only 29 goals tonight. A disappointment after the high of yesterday. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host today. And joining me across the water all the way from San Diego is Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm in San Diego, but I still got a cup of tea on the go, as I normally would do after a Champions League night. Some things never change. The Padres are winning today, which is different from yesterday when we recorded, so that's better. And I've just seen a really good game of football because I did watch the Barca-PSG game, and what better than watching two of the best teams in the world go at each other? And we saw quite an interesting matchup tonight.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think tonight felt like the more balanced of the 2 days. Obviously, we saw a couple of Manitas yesterday, you know, 5 goals for Atleti, 5 for Real Madrid, 5 for Bayern Munich. So this one felt a little bit more balanced. Only 2 real hammerings, I think, across the board, which meant it was a really entertaining night of football. But I do think we should start with that game between Barcelona and PSG, a kind of run it back, if you will, because this was the final that a lot of people wanted last season. And considering how entertaining it was, perhaps it would have been the final that we deserved last season. What did you make of it?
Well, Barcelona probably wouldn't want this game ever again because they can't win it anymore. It's now 5 goes at trying to beat PSG, and they failed in all of them. Haven't done them since 2017. PSG are the champions of the competition, and this was a statement as to why they could go and win it again. You know, they haven't been flagged up at the beginning as favourites, and a lot of people just assume they won't go and win it again because it's so difficult to do so, and they're also, I guess, kind of unfashionable because they've only just won it for the first time and they never get the credit they probably deserve because they're in France. But they put Barca to the sword on a night when they really had to settle things down because it didn't start with things going their way on many fronts, to be honest with you. Barca obviously had a great start to the season. And they would have come into this one with some optimism, knowing that PSG were without Kvara and Dembele and João Neves and Doué and whoever else was missing. Like they had a fair few out. And yeah, João Neves pulled out of the starting 11 before the game starts. CBS, my commentary, didn't actually discover that until 10 minutes into the game is when we were alerted to that. I felt a little bit sorry for the commentator as he said, it's probably... late change there was actually in the lineups. It's like, mate, we're 10 minutes into the game, mate. I've picked up on that by now. but nevertheless, PSG struggled to assert themselves in the early stages. And this can't be a Lamine Yamal loving show. It can't, because of the way that it's ended. But the first 20 minutes, he was brilliant. He was brilliant. And it was one of those where you're just like, oh my God. Literally in the first minute, he does this, like, what do you call those spins? I don't even know what you call them, where you go in between two.
Pirouette almost.
Yeah, like a pirouette, yeah. I don't know if there's an official name for that in football? I don't know, probably. But anyway, spins and then does a step over, comes. It's unbelievable. For the first minute of a Champions League game against the reigning champions of it, like, it's just absurd. Like, I literally rewound it and called Taylor in to show her. Like, she absolutely doesn't care, but I had to show someone. And she was like, oh, cool. Who is he then? Is this his first game? I was like, just get out the room. Get out the room. Don't worry about it. I'll never mention this to you again. But Lamine was just started on fire because then, like, just before the quarter hour mark, he plays this unreal pass that then finds its way through to Ferran Torres, who could easily have opened the score, and it takes a good block from Zabanyu, who had a very good night, to block him. He did a no-look pass around the same time, which was absolutely absurd. And I tell you what, Nuno Mendes, at this stage, was not enjoying his Wednesday night. I was like, oh, he's getting a proper run around there. And PSG were kind of chasing shadows in the middle of the park as well. And I was like, this is a weird one. Like, PSG feel rocked. It got a bit worse for Nuno Mendes as well, because Barcelona do take the lead during this period of dominance in the game. And it was important that they did that, because they really were on top at this point. And you were just wondering, like, when is Lamine going to get the goal? As it turns out, it's not. He does start the move, though. He cuts inside. The ball ends up sweeping over to the other side. Rashford plays a perfectly weighted first-time ball, and Ferran Torres scores. So it's all going well. And as I say, PSG rocked. Then Nuno Mendes, it looks like his night might be over, to be honest, but 35 minutes in, and Frankie de Jong makes this tactical foul on him because he's tearing away from him. And he kind of goes down his Achilles. That's not what he intends to do. He just needs to bring him down. But his stud does go down his Achilles. And he's down for a minute and he's not looking happy. You're like, oh, this is really harsh. If this rules him out right now, that this is a bad moment. Thankfully for PSG, it takes a lot to hold this lad back, and he must have had another Achilles in his pocket or something, because a few minutes later, he's off on the charge again. Nobody can stop him. And Seni Mayulu ends up sticking PSG back on level terms after a great breakaway from PSG. So we're back in it. So everything's square at the break. Maybe Barca exerted too much energy in that first half. I don't know. Whatever it was, they couldn't play with that intensity again. They couldn't come up with those same combinations in the final third in the same way again. And maybe it was wrong to expect them to, because it was insane at times, to be honest. But PSG really did exert authority in the game in the second half and really started to look like a team that are champions of the competitions. Yes, Barcelona did disappear a little bit, but equally, PSG just came good. They hit the post late on. It looked like it wasn't quite going to happen for them. But then, of course, the goal does come, and Ramos is the guy that ends up taking it. Balde seems to go missing in the left-back position for Barcelona in that moment.
It's very weird, isn't it?
Like, there's just this gap. And like, Balde, I'm like, where? Oh, and he's like running back across. You're like, oh, mate, you're not making this back up. Not against this team.
Not against Hakimi.
Yeah, Hakimi, like, for all the talk will be of Nuno Mendes today, it's like, Hakimi was equally as good. And Ramos finishes it off. The PSG fans are absolutely delirious with joy. They're going crazy. And that's it. Game done, wrapped up. And you can't switch off in those moments like that. It's one that Balde will probably be having nightmares about. It wasn't like an obvious error that leads to a goal, but it is a problem. It's a problem that does lead to the goal, because the gap is wide open on that side, and you can't do that against this team. A very, very intriguing game. But ultimately, PSG showing their power in the competition and showing that maybe they can go on and win it again.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of bits there. One, obviously, there's been a lot of chat about Gerard Martin, right? And the drop-off from Alejandro Balde at left-back is so extreme when Martin plays. And look, there are definitely elements of that that are very, very true. But it doesn't make Alex Balde infallible. And I think that you're absolutely right here. One of the things I did notice about this one, and I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, was the changes that Luis Enrique made, not in terms of personnel, but in terms of the way that the structure of the game worked at halftime. And you're right, it felt like Barcelona were absolutely tearing PSG apart at times in the first one. And look, Ferran has a little bit to answer for here. He should have probably got a hat trick. You know, he should have scored twice before he actually put the ball in the back of the net. And,
yep.
And ultimately, you know, there's one of those where maybe he should put it back for Rashford instead, who would have a tap in. Just a couple of moments where you're kind of expecting just a little bit more quality in the final third. Now, Ferran does a very different job to Robert Lewandowski, for example. They're different types of players. And Barcelona are obviously looking to exploit that pace in behind. But the finishing ability is not on the same level. And therefore, you do miss more of those chances as well, even if you're making a different type of them. So there's a little bit of that from a Barcelona perspective, where they would have hoped to have kind of been out of sight by half time. But I did think that Luis Enrique, you know, shoring up the midfield, making sure that Barcelona weren't able to have the same success, especially down that right-hand flank with Lamine Yamal, that they did in the first half. doubling up in those areas. And bear in mind, this is a PSG side. You know, you mentioned the Joao Neves absence there that happened just before the game, but also a PSG side who are currently missing, you know, missing not just Ousmane Dembele, the reigning Ballon d'Or winner, but Desiré Doué and Kvaratskhelia Kvaratskhelia as well, and Marquinhos, who's sort of the on-pitch leader, even if they have plenty of quality to cover in those areas at centre-back. The fullbacks are still the best in Europe by pretty much anyone's standard, I think. Nuno mentioned, and Achraf Hakimi, absolutely sensational. But, you know, the way that they managed to put this together with Barkala and Mayulu and Mbaye as the front three, you know, none of whom started in the Champions League final win over Inter. But also with Gonçalo Ramos on the bench. Now, he scores the winner in this game. And if you are Gonçalo Ramos, you're part of this squad and you're the kind of backup number nine and you're kind of backing up Ousmane Dembele, you could probably accept that, right? Despite the fact you are a wonderful football player in your own right. When he's absent and the players starting in, you know, instead of you are youngsters who have limited experience in this competition, it could, you know, there's a temptation to be incredibly frustrated by the situation as it rolls out. But here again, and not for the first time this season, and I'm certain not for the last, he comes off the bench to make the difference. And the way that Luis Enrique plays that trump card late on in games to turn things around, we saw it in the Super Cup against Spurs. We see it again here. I think he scored the last goal in the win over Atalanta, which is obviously a very different kind of scenario. That was putting the cherry on the cake. But this was very much the one that sealed the deal. You know, that takes some serious squad building and also conversations with a player to be like, look, you know, even when the first choices aren't starting, I want you there as a finisher. I want you the guy, you know, as the game opens up towards the end, to be the ball, guy that puts the ball in the back of the net, which could be the difference between 1 point and three. And the fact that Luis Enrique has him, you know, in that role and seemingly happy in that role is incredible credit to his man management, I think.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's not easy to manage egos, particularly at PSG, but we know that this is a different type of squad that's been built. And I think Luis Enrique commands a different type of respect. People just seem to like him and accept what he says better. And it won't always be the case, obviously, and Ramos will be making the most of moments like this to remind his manager of why he should be starting. But ultimately, Luis Enrique has been proven right to keep him hungry, bring him off the bench and let him provide that moment. You know, like the equivalent would have been that Ramos wouldn't have been on the pitch at that moment. That's the thing. Like, obviously there might have been another moment in the game when he would have got a goal or whatever. But equally, there's no way, if the game had played out in a similar manner, that Ramos would still have been on the pitch after 90 minutes because he'd have been one of the guys dragged. So I think he should be grateful. I think he should be grateful that Luis Enrique gave him the opportunity to actually finish that off.
Well, I'm sure he'll have to be phrased slightly differently to that. But equally, there is a place in this world for people who come on and make the difference, right? And he's very much proved to be that for PSG over the course of this season. A really, really big win for the current champions of Europe away at Barcelona, especially after the first half that they had to endure to turn it around towards the end and pick holes in that Barcelona team, you know, over and over again as we got to the end of the game, I think shows not only their kind of physical attributes, but the mental ones as well. That's why they're champions of Europe in so many ways. Let's go on to another game that had late drama, Monaco 2, Manchester City 2. And it was a bit of a strange one, this, from City Dean, who were the better side for much of this one, but who got punished late on by not putting it to bed. Now, the final goal, I'll go backwards on this one, was a penalty that Eric Dier actually ended up putting away after winning himself. And the penalty was a little bit harsh for me. I can see what I was given. There's a high foot in there. It's potentially dangerous, but doesn't look like loads of contact. There does look like there's a touch on the ball, but, from the defender before Eric Dier goes down and before there is the slightest bit of contact with him. And City absolutely apoplectic about the fact that this is given, right? But I was listening to Erling Haaland speak a minute ago on TNT, and he basically was like, yeah, well, if you kick someone in the head, then I can see why it'd be a penalty. I'd want a penalty the same way. And I think that maybe does it a little bit of an injustice in terms of what happened there. Mm. And I think that there will be plenty of frustration within the City fan base about the way this panned out. But equally, you know, I say they were punished by not putting the game to bed because City were the better side, you know, here, like they were in the ascendancy for so much of it. They had a lot of the ball. And it does feel like this adaptation to being slightly more transitional feels like it's going to take time. Now, there are really good bits to this. And to be honest, they should have really put this one away. There were moments in the second half, you know, a couple of ones where Savinho races through, Tijani Reinders hits the bar with a really good effort. There are some very, very good saves from the Monaco goalkeeper as well. But I do think that City will look at this as 2 points dropped rather than a point gained. Now, there are no easy games in the Champions League. We know that. And Monaco are a really, you know, good side in their own right. They've had a bit of an up and down season so far. But when they click, they really click. And there's some really, really talented footballers in here. Max Agliuche in particular, who I want to talk about a little bit more in a second. But the thing is with this City side is that in the first half, they go at this really aggressively. They score a great goal from Erling Haaland, who kind of peels off the defenders to lift the ball over the keeper. And whilst that lead only lasts 3 minutes, is an absolute wonder strike from Jordan Tezer, who fires one to the top corner. And sometimes there's sort of like nothing you can do about a goal. It's just one of those absolutely sensational hits. There's nothing really on. And he curls one top bins, Donnarumma rooted to the spot. Just a brilliant, brilliant goal. The City take the lead again before halftime. It's Haaland again, this time from a standing start, overpowering two defenders and kind of creating all of the velocity of the header, you know, from his neck. It's a goal that I don't think many other players in world football could score. You know, one of those ones you're looking at him being like, you are just absolutely ridiculous. 16 goals now in all competitions for Erling Haaland, for club alone. We obviously know he scored a heap for his country as well in World Cup qualification. So it's been a good start to the season for him. He touched the ball 7 times in the first half, 2 of them he scored from. And his movement was exceptional, especially for the first goal where, you know, he just peels off in behind, makes that run, and he's picked out beautifully, just lifts it over the keeper. Great stuff. In the second half, it felt like City's, I don't want to say energy dropped off, that's probably the wrong word, but their ability to just drive and their dynamism perhaps just didn't feel like it was at the same extent. And it felt like they were getting deeper and deeper and kind of trying to invite Monaco onto them so that they could play those balls in behind and get in, you know, get into those transitional areas. And I understand that from a City perspective, because, you know, if you have Haaland on the pitch, you have Savinho, you have Doku on the pitch, you know that there are players who are going to get the opposition one-on-one and who can make things happen. But it just felt like they ceded a little bit of the control that they had in the first half. And for me, that opened up the game, Monaco to kind of strike back at them. Now, they might get a little bit lucky with the penalty, fine. Like that those kind of things can happen to you. But, you know, after that happened, there was 7 odd minutes left of this game and City suddenly upped the ante again, you know, really, really did start to work the triangles in the final third. And you're thinking, if you just stayed at this intensity for the entirety of the 90 minutes, you would have won this game by far more. And we're used to City putting teams away. We're used to City kind of seeing that they have a lead, seeing that they're the team in the ascendancy and just absolutely rip-roaring through teams. And it feels like a little bit this season that has been reined back in, that they're trying to become more comfortable sitting a bit deeper, trying to become a bit more comfortable soaking up pressure and releasing on the counter. And it just doesn't feel like it's quite there yet. And that's not to say, you know, like we talked about with a variety of teams yesterday, that's not to say that in January it won't be working like clockwork and City will be impossible to play against once they're 1-0 up. Because you know that they're going to just sit in and the balls over the top you cannot deal with because of the amount of pace and power and finishing ability that they have in that final third. But right now, it just doesn't feel like it's quite there. And I think that is the most interesting thing that we're seeing from City in these last couple of weeks, where they haven't been able really, bar the Manchester derby, to put games to bed in the same kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously beat Burnley 5-1 at the weekend, so that wasn't too bad.
Pinch of salt, though.
It left it late. Burnley obviously made them work for it, but they've got to open up. They've got to make sure that they open up big enough leads, because this one they should have won. The penalty does look harsh to me. Like, I've only seen it briefly, like after the game, obviously before we've jumped on here, I wanted to see it because I saw the complaints. I don't think it's a penalty, but doesn't matter. It's given. And it does sound like City took their foot off the gas a bit at a time when you've now got to kill the game and go and get the third, right? You've got to get that third one because that's what truly makes sure of a win, particularly at this level whereby every team believes in themselves or they can't be in the Champions League in the first place. They all know that if they get a sniff, they're coming back into it. And so, obviously, Monaco have had to wait until the 90th minute for their opportunity to get level for a second time in the game. But when the moment's come, they've made the most of it. So City won't be very happy in the sense that they didn't put the game to bed. But they are re-emerging as a dominant force, which I think has to be seen as a positive considering where they were. They're now 6 unbeaten. They generally are back in the goal groove. I know it's so dependent on Haaland. Like he scores, I don't know what the percentage is,
it's okay
75% of their goals.
Haaland, though, because he's so good that you want to be dependent.
That's literally why you've got him.
Yeah.
Like when you have a striker like Haaland, you don't really want the goals shared around because that kind of makes him pointless. He's there to score goals. It like that has to be, and it is more obvious this season that's the aim. It's like it's a filter system, and it's supposed to end up with him scoring a goal. But that's what it should be because he's the best person in the world at scoring a goal. So it's a very simple game sometimes. And from Pep Guardiola creating some of the most complicated football we've ever seen, he's also got back to basics methods that he hopes will work this season. It's like, right, well, if we could just concede less goals and get the ball to this guy in better positions, we'll be better. And it ultimately is heading back in that direction. You know, they won the first game 2-0 against Napoli. It was hard to judge because obviously of the red card. They got a 1-1 draw against Arsenal, which is one of the biggest games of their season. And now at least they haven't lost this game. That's the key. Now they've just got to find a consistency of performance, which they haven't had for a long, long time now, in terms of churning out wins. Can they go to Brentford? Can they beat Everton? Can they beat Villarreal? All these teams are like now expected to be beaten. And it'll be interesting to see whether they truly can do it. But I do have more faith in them than I did after, what was it, 4 games when they'd lost two of them.
Yeah, I think they are getting there. There are still kinks to work out. But Manchester City do feel like they're becoming a stronger side again, even if this result has gone against them. Just a quick word for Monaco, though, who I thought were really impressive. They went through at the back. Adi Hütter doesn't do this very often. And I thought it was interesting to see him go to that 3-at-the-back wing-back system. They struggled a bit with Haaland in the first half. Obviously, scoring twice from 7 touches is quite impressive. They marshalled him really well in the second. And I thought that, you know, that ability to actually close down the game. And look, I just praised Luis Enrique for changing things at halftime. Hütter did the same, right? Was able to kind of stop Man City in their tracks a little bit. They didn't have that same ability to control in the second half. But the outball was always Akliouche, who was just magnificent. There was so much interest in him in the summer.
There still is, mate.
Including Manchester City. And he made a point, I think, tonight of showing just why that interest should be.
I think Tottenham, they're scouting him tonight, in fact. I think Tottenham are very interested in signing him.
He was sensational, I thought. The way that he was able to carry the ball, the way he took on players, the way he was the creative spark for this entire Monaco unit, sort of floating around behind the striker, kind of generally on that right-hand side, but with the ability to drift and just make things happen. I thought he was glorious. And look, a lot, he was kind of quoted around the €70 million price point, which seemed expensive, obviously, but I think that worse players than Akliouche went for bigger fees over the course of this summer. And I think that there will be a queue of clubs at the top table waiting to sign him because he does feel like a very, very special footballer. And Monaco dealt, you know, with this as well as they could have and have come out with a hard fought point, you know, You think that's lucky or not is a different question, but I thought that they put together a really impressive performance, especially in the second half, to slow down the City machine and then ultimately nick a point towards the end. So fair play to Monaco. Right, we'll take a little break there. When we come back afterwards, we're talking about two wins for Premier League sides, Newcastle United away at Union Saint-Gilloise and Arsenal at home against Olympiacos. Stick with us. Welcome back to Ranks FC and Champions League Takeaway. Two more games to get stuck into now. And then Dean, I'm going to throw over to you for the first one. Newcastle went to Belgium to play Union Saint-Gilloise, and they absolutely hammered them. I was going to say they were away at USG, but that doesn't feel quite fair. USG's stadium isn't fit for purpose for European football, according to UEFA. So they're having to play their games at Anderlecht Stadium, which will feel a little bit foreign to them. And also feels a little bit like these games are having to be played on neutral territory, which maybe isn't so incredibly fun. Now, they were excellent last weekend in the Champions League away from home. They put together one of the most comprehensive performances, I think, from anyone across those first couple of days of action. But they were very much swatted aside here by a Newcastle side who really do feel like they found their mojo at the moment.
Yeah, but they did have chances. Like this isn't the walkover that it looks like on paper. Two of Newcastle's goals have come from the penalty spot. One of them has come late. And Voltimada's, some people say it's a deflection. I say it's a moment of class, to be honest, the way that he's managed to steer the ball into the back of the net. But in between, like, there was plenty of times when Newcastle were on the back foot and either lucky to see the ball drift wide or see the goalkeeper make a save or a defender make a block. So, yeah, they still had to work to make sure that they did get this one in the bag. Look, Newcastle find goals quite hard to come by, to be honest with you. It's not been a free-flowing season for them, and they've really become a resilient team rather than a free-scoring team. So any Newcastle fans that had made this trip will be pleased to see them rattle the net four times. It's the first time we've seen Voltimada, Elanga and Gordon start together. And that is obviously something that Union Saint-Gilloise found difficult to deal with. Elanga was electric at times. So direct, his feet so fast. They found him really tricky to deal with. Anthony Gordon had a really good game. He's just in such a good groove at the moment. His deliveries are good. His runs are really purposeful. His penalties here were spot on. So they've got players that are certainly coming into form right now. I guess Voltimada will get a lot of the headlines. And a lot of the reason for that is that ahead of the game, Newcastle have been called idiots by Bayern Munich for paying £69 million for him. Maybe not.
Isn't all that much more than what Bayern were willing to put on the table for him. I should just say.
Yeah. And look, obviously, it was only 18 months ago this guy was a free agent, right? It does feel like his value is a bit extreme compared to where his career was.
Sure, but that's the market.
But ultimately, he found the club. He scored a load of goals. And so Newcastle bought him. That's the way it works. And yeah, you wouldn't expect it to be quite as much as that. But in the Premier League, that's what people will pay for goals. And at the moment, he's delivering them. It's his third goal in four starts. And as I say, it's a shot from Tonali that looks like it just deflects in. But on closer inspection, Voltimada seems to deliberately steer it in with his foot as it comes behind, kind of flicks it. So that was quite impressive. Tonali, by the way, talking about players that we think were overpriced.
Overpriced tonight, I thought.
Yeah, and this guy really has lived up to his price tag now. Obviously, it wasn't the perfect start for him in English football and all the rest of it, but he does seem worth every penny. And you get into the stage now where you're thinking, blimey, is it a new contract or is it a transfer? Which one's going to happen here? But Newcastle can't bear the thought of this guy leaving. And so you're starting to look like you can build something from that extent. This this isn't obviously like how you judge yourself with the Champions League. This isn't the sort of opponent that you're going to face in the knockout phases of the Champions League. But ultimately, you've got to go and win it. And it was a tough tie. And they've managed to score four goals away from home, two in each half. They've managed to put the game to bed and hopefully given themselves some confidence for a game at the weekend against Nottingham Forest and the next home fixture in the Champions League against Benfica, two very winnable games for Newcastle that really could help their season start to take shape.
Yeah, I mean, put a little bit of respect on the champions of Belgium, Union Saint-Gilloise, please. I expect to see them in the knockout stages of this competition, even if maybe Newcastle United don't. They were very, very good last time out. And as you say, this wasn't quite as much of a walkover as perhaps it looked on paper. But equally, I do think you make a really interesting point there. The front three starting for the first time. Well, what do you have on both wings? You have electric pace in Alanga and Anthony Gordon, and you have a striker here in Voltimada who wants to drop in and drop the ball over the shoulder, right? Like for players to run onto. That's what we saw him do.
Do you think he's good? Do you think he's like legit Premier League quality?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he is already a really intriguing footballer. Because he's very, very different to almost anybody else. Like there's no real comparison stylistically to what he does. The closest comparison and the one that was thrown around a lot was kind of Harry Kane-ish, right? In terms of his desire to drop deep and be involved in play. But I don't think that there's the kind of sharp end of that just there at the moment. Although, to be fair, as you say, three goals in four games would suggest otherwise. But I do think that in terms of having someone who's going to be that focal point, who can get in and be a danger in the air, as we've seen, that wasn't one of the strings to his bow. We saw very much at Stuttgart, but he's already scored twice from headers in a Newcastle shirt, which is something that people will be pleased to see. I think his great strength is going to be with Alanga and Gordon flying down the wings. Can he get into those areas and allow those guys to get in behind? I think the answer is yes. And that is something I'm really excited to see more of. I'm excited to see what happens when Johan Wisse comes into this team as well and see what he can do from that perspective in terms of having someone making those runs in front of him. If all of that comes together, he might look like a very, very special signing by the end of this season. I think he's incredibly talented. And although I think that you're right in that fee probably feels a bit much considering where he's at in his career, it's an opportunity to sign one of the kind of unicorn players that they've decided to take a gamble on. And given the way that the market looked at the end of the window, I think it's quite a fun gamble that Newcastle have taken there on Voltimada. And look, so far so good, I think is probably the way that
I've heard. Yeah, definitely.
Right, let's come on to Arsenal, 2-0 against Olympiacos. And this was, Dean, the Martin Ødegaard show in so many different ways. In the first half of this game, he was nigh on unplayable. I thought he was absolutely sublime. The weight of passes, the tempo control, all of it was the Martin Ødegaard that, you know, we've been kind of waiting to see again. And we saw a little bit of it, I think, against Newcastle at the weekend when he came off the bench and really started to push the game in Arsenal's favour. This was pure, unfiltered, brilliant Ødegaard, especially in that first 45, as I say. But one of the things I was interested in here is that actually he prayed a little bit deeper than I was expecting. It was Mikel Merino who felt like the most advanced of the three midfielders in the Arsenal trio, Zubimendi, Ødegaard, and Merino in the middle for this one. And it suited him really nicely. And I wonder what that means for this potential opportunity to see Ødegaard and Eze playing together. Because if Ødegaard can create and control a game like he did here from that number eight spot, playing slightly more withdrawn, you know, could you play an Eze on the left-hand side of the midfield where Merino played tonight in the more advanced role? And what does that open up for Arsenal, especially in games which they're going to dominate? The other thing that's probably worth pointing out here is the amount of depth that Arsenal had going for them at this moment. Because, you know, Mikel Arteta rotated his starting lineup, which you'd expect after such an intense game against Newcastle United at the weekend. Ben White came in at right back. We saw Lewis Skelly play at left back in this one. Gabriel and Saliba paired together in the middle, which makes sense, especially after Saliba signed that new contract. But Mosquera has been playing so well. It was Ødegaard, Zubimendi and Marino, so no Rice in the midfield, no Eze here, and Martinelli, Gyökeres and Trossard. So obviously Madueke out at the moment, but no Saka either. And so off the bench, Arsenal were able to bring on Mosquera, Saka, Eze, Urien Timber, and Declan Rice. They left on the bench Max Dowman, who everyone was excited to see. He was added to the team sheet late in this one. Calafiori, Nwaneri, and then obviously Madueke and Havertz to come back at some point later in the season. That is an immense amount of talent in a squad. Yeah. And the rotations here, look, maybe the fact that Eze's come in and people are starting to talk about him playing in the midfield and where Odegaard fits has been the spark of inspiration that Martin Odegaard needed to kind of push himself back to the top level, because this was just incredible. Like such a glorious performance, a Martin masterclass. I thought Zubimendi was excellent as well. So a double Martin masterclass in some ways. But Martinelli scores the opener. It's after absolutely bullish work from Victor Gyökeres, who sort of like rides three challenges, two defenders converging on him from either side. And he just sort of bursts through the middle of them like a raging bull, pokes the ball past the goalkeeper. And what I loved about this was that Martinelli, you know, he gets around the keeper and he could just tap it in. He waits and waits and waits. He's like trying to shepherd the ball into the goal. It comes off the post and he ends up tucking it in. But you could see that he was like, look, Gyökeres has done the work here. If this ball's going to go in, I'm not going to nick it. And he manages to put it away anyway. And I thought that was incredibly selfless for a player who's, you know, fighting for his own life in terms of starting games at the moment. You know, for him to kind of have that level of selflessness and kind of team first mentality, knows it would be really good for Gyökeres to get on the team sheet, quite a little bit of the noise around him as well. I thought that was pretty special. And Trossard was excellent as well on the other flank. They rotated quite nicely, the two of them dovetailing to kind of switch wings at times and make things happen. But it's one of those weird games where Arsenal had major opportunities over and over again. They dominated it on the stats lines. They dominated it on the pitch as well. And yet they didn't find the second till really, really late on. It was Bukayo Saka off the bench after, you guessed it, Martin Ødegaard ball put him through into the middle of the box. Ødegaard should have scored. Probably the only blot on his records tonight. About 10 minutes from time, ball bounces to him. He sort of bobbles a shot towards goal and then probably should do better with the rebound. But that is the only black mark on his book from tonight's performance, which was just incredible. But you kind of look at it and think, well, Saka's come on here, he scores a goal to seal the deal. But, you know, Arteta's ability to bring him on and be able to rest him in a game of this magnitude, and I know it's Olympiacos at home, I know it's not the hardest game that Arsenal are going to have to face in the Champions League. Olympiacos, for what it's worth, haven't scored a goal now in their opening two games. That 0-0 draw with Paphos and then a 2-0 loss here at the Emirates. They had their moments. There were some incredible saves from David Raya. And, you know, people talk about the conversation about best goalkeepers in the Premier League, in the world, whatever you want to kind of discuss. There was a moment here in the first half. Daniel Podence takes the ball and he volleys it towards goal. Raya has had almost nothing to do for the first 20, 25 minutes. And he claws one out in a save of the season contender. It's absolutely astounding that he manages to get to the ball and turn it over the bar from his standing start, because Podence has his back to him. There's no way he can read the ball. It's just one of those complete reflex saves that does so much. And, you know, he kept Arsenal ahead in the game. And now they should have probably have put it to bed earlier, sure, 100%. But they've turned to him in moments of need. They get a little bit lucky. El Kabi's offside when he does score it. He'll get the ball in the back of the net for an equaliser in the second half, but he's quite clearly offside at that point. And Arsenal, you know, perhaps the only real criticism I can have of them is that they didn't put the game to bed before the 92nd minute, at which point it felt more like a relief than a kind of joyful moment in some ways. That's maybe the only thing you can level against them, but it was really professional. They were able to rotate the squad. Arteta is starting to work the depth that he has available to him in a really nice way. The goals are being shared around in a good kind of manner as well. Arsenal look really, really strong, and the amount of talent that they have at their disposal right now has put them, I think, in really good stead for where they've started.
Another game where they haven't conceded a goal is very key. Obviously, Newcastle did manage to get one in the last game. Man City have managed to get one. Liverpool managed to get, but like it's one. If you could put in a great performance, you might get one goal against Arsenal at the moment. But that's the kind of level that they're setting for themselves. And when you look at their upcoming fixtures, like they're at a good run. I think it's six unbeaten for them actually at the moment. Gyökeres has played the last three starts. I think he's played full 90s now for Gyökeres, which shows fitness and conditioning on his part, but also faith in him and a want for him to go and score goals for Arsenal now. So like, this is an important period too. And if he is the flat track bully that people say he is, then this is the period of games where Gyökeres is going to get the chance to come into his own. West Ham at home next, then they've got Fulham away. In the Premier League, they've then got Crystal Palace to come, as well as Burnley and Sunderland. But in between, they've also got Atletico Madrid, which is a really tough game, but it's at home. So I'm still expecting them to win it. But we'll see, because Atleti obviously on a bit of a tear themselves the last couple of games. Brighton in the Carabao, and they've got Prague as well in the Champions League. Like, this is a really interesting period about rotation for Arsenal. We see that they're able to leave Declan Rice on the bench tonight. Calafiori's on the bench. Saka's on the bench. Odegaard comes in and gets 90. I don't know who plays when at the moment for Arsenal. That's what's really interesting. The fact that like Rice sits out the Nottingham Forest game and comes on for 20 minutes. The fact he sits out tonight and comes on for whatever he got, 25 minutes, half hour. It's very interesting, yeah, the way that Arteta not just has to manage his squad, but the way that he can now manage his squad because of their transfer activity and that extra layer of depth they've got in some of these positions. Really gives them a better chance of actually surviving a period like this. So even if they do get another injury, they're ready for it. So very, very promising signs for Arsenal.
Yeah, imagine this point last year, Mikel Arteta deciding to leave Bukayo Saka and Declan Rice on the bench.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been unfathomable. And now it was, you know, they were able to bring them on with the game. Okay, not going completely to plan, but still 1-0 up.
But they'll start against West Ham. And the aim will be to get that game won by half time. Like that, I'm not saying it will work, but like that will now be like, okay, we've done it. The gamble worked. We've kept their energy levels down. Saka's had a bit more rest time. He's also managed to get on the pitch to try and work on his sharpness.
And get a goal.
Yeah, exactly. And now we go into a game against one of the worst teams in the league. And what are West Ham going to do? West Ham are going to sit back, they're going to defend, and they're going to try and they're going to hope Jarrod Bowen scores one on the break. Basically, that's what you're going to get. And can they now find a way to not just win that game 1-0 and wear them down and wait for it, but can Arsenal now try to bring West Ham out to them and see if they can carve them apart? Be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing with that is that you can play an Aberietse, you can play a Bukayo Saka, players who can break down low blocks, people who can come into that game and
what about Martinelli? Does he get this, you know, poor old Martinelli, like, we're now like, oh, well, he can go away for a bit now. He's got his start, or he's got another goal. He's happy for now. He's not going to be happy for now if he's like does this and then ends up back on the bench. So there's that, you know, we talked before about Trossard always wants to start. Like, such a drive from so many players to be in that 11. That when they come on, the appetite for success is huge.
Sure, but also the flip side of that is that if everyone is being rotated, you know, if Martinelli is there going, well, Saka plays every game, why can't I play every game? It's not that. You know, there are other players being rested. Mm. It's not a first team and then some. It feels like everyone has opportunity for a bit of rest and to be able to come on and change games and come at it from different angles. And that gives Arteta options to change games from the bench as well, which he's done very, very well in the last couple of games, I think. So major credit to Arsenal, a very, very important win. Right, we'll take a break there. When we come back, we're going to round up the rest of the action. Stick with us here on Champions League Takeaway.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, where Jackie Boy is going to run us through the rest of the action that we didn't have time to watch.
Mm, there was a lot of really, really interesting games across the rest of the slate. And there was plenty of talking points in them as well. Some really, really good battles. I want to start with Villarreal 2, Juventus 2, because this was, in many ways, a game of two halves with a sting in the tail, is probably how I would describe it. First half, Villarreal at El Madrigal, really, really impressive and very good value for their 1-0 lead at the break. Mikhail Tadza scoring the opening goal. It's a brilliant bit of play for him. He bursts between two defenders, gets fouled, but manages to kind of flick the ball to a teammate, passes it back into him. He's got back up. He's found the space and he fires it home. I still can't really believe that no one else was in for the Georgian striker when he left Lyon this summer. It is one of those strange ones where he has so many different fun elements to his game. He's not obviously on the same level as this, but there are elements of kind of like Aguero, Suarez to Mikhail Tadza's game that I really, really like. Mm. He's as small diminutive striker, but he gets into really good positions. He's a great finisher, and he battles for absolutely everything. He's a proper little workhorse up front. He's had a very, very impressive start at Villarreal. I think he enjoys it, having a strike partner, etc. But it's very, very impressive what he's been able to put together since that move from Lyon, where I thought he was pretty good last season as well. You know, having jumped up from Metz and being the kind of top scorer in Ligue 2, he kind of took to Ligue 1 relative duck to water, I thought, and then got that move to a Champions League club in Villarreal in the summer, and has kind of hit the ground running there as well. So someone to keep an eye on. I think he's a really, really talented footballer. Mm. But Villarreal could and maybe should have been more than 1-0 up at the break. And they were made to pay for it, because at half time, Igor Tudor brought Chico Conceição off the bench. And he absolutely spun this game on his head. When he was a youngster coming through at the Porto Academy, there were a lot of messy comparisons, because he's a very, very small player who has very good close control and dribbles in smart, tight areas and makes things happen. And we were always wary of those kind of comparisons, right? And rightly so. He is not Lionel Messi. Very, very few players are. Or even go towards that level. But I did think that he was really, really impressive here, and a little bit Messi-esque in the way that he just flipped the game on its head. You know, his work rate, he sets up a chance about 5 minutes after coming on for Jonathan David, who fluffs it from 5 yards out. He got the start again today. And that battle for the number nine spot at Juventus is going to be one of the talking points across the whole season. You know, Vlahovic, Jonathan David, who obviously can play a little bit deeper as well, but also Lois Openda, who came in the summer. There's a lot of bodies in there looking to be the number nine. You don't take your chances. You're going to be punished for it. And Jonathan David didn't here. He fluffed that one. He had another moment where he did really, really well and kind of chipped the ball against the bar, which was that 2-1 up to Juventus after the two goals. And you're thinking, oh, are they going to pay for that? And is that Jonathan David's chance to kind of establish himself as the nine gone for another week? You know, that doesn't mean he won't get another one. No, of course it doesn't. But, you know, I think that they're waiting for someone to kind of lay the hammer down. And the closest that anyone's come to doing that is Dusan Vlahovic with the start that he's had to this season. But Juve do turn it around. And I spoke last week, obviously, in the draw they had against Borussia Dortmund, about the grit that has been brought into this Juventus side by Igor Tudor. And they were so comprehensively outplayed in the first half, I thought, that the fact that they were able to really, really flip the game on its head and kind of come back into it was impressive in its own right. And the equaliser is one of the most bizarre goals you'll ever see, in that it's Federico Gatti scoring a bicycle kick. In the
oh
box.
Good, you had to text me about it.
I texted Dean being like, Federico Gatti has absolutely no right to score this goal, like none whatsoever. He you know, the ball comes in. Not only is that, it's a Lloyd Kelly assist, because Lloyd Kelly gets the flick on from a long throw and Gatti just throws himself at it. It's not a great save from Arno Tenas, who we should probably, you know, point out here, should do better with this. But I think he's a bit shocked, as the rest of us were, that Gatti's even, you know, attempted a bicycle kick in the opponent's box. Because one, I don't know why he was there. And two, you know, you're not expecting that from the big man himself, that level of athleticism, Haaland-esque in many ways. So he scores that. And then about 3 minutes, it feels like Villarreal are kind of capitulating. They play a ball across their own defensive line that Chico Conceição nicks in, just drives through the defenders and slots home. And you're thinking, wow, okay, this is it. Juve have completed the comeback, and we know what they've been like this season. They've been really hard to break down. No Bremer tonight, which means that they're obviously more likely to concede goals. But equally, you know, it did feel at that moment that the momentum had completely shifted. Now, there is a late sting in the tail from Juventus' perspective, because Renato Vega pumps up big from a set piece to score the equaliser for Villarreal very late on in this one. But a really, really good game. A game which very much swung, you know, between the two teams in terms of momentum and the way that it all came together. But I was really impressed with both teams, to be honest, in different manners. But a really entertaining one, and one you should probably watch the highlights from, even just for that Federico Gatti goal, which is still a little bit unbelievable, if I'm honest.
I love it. But yeah, interesting result. Wasn't expecting that to be the outcome. But yeah, Juve, look, in terms of Bremer, I think they're kind of being careful at the moment. I don't think it's necessarily an injury setback for him. It's more that they're trying to just make sure that his condition is completely bang on, because he's become so important to the early season success. They know that he's like, he's at such a prime period of now of his career. They're desperate to keep him. I guess partly they don't want him to play because then somebody else is going to come and try to buy him, because he's got a release clause, which is pretty attainable, around 60 million euros. But yeah, let's see if they've managed to get through a game without losing without him. So that's a good sign.
Still unbeaten in all competitions this season. So worth bearing in mind, they are very, very hard to beat, even if they have their own little mental collapses at times. Talking of collapses, Borussia Dortmund 4, Athletic Club 1. It's been a really bad couple of weeks for Athletic.
Good win for Dortmund though, isn't it? Dortmund are on a tear.
Huge win for Dortmund, and I want to talk about them in a second. I do think that Athletic feel a little bit all over the place at the moment. There's a couple of major injuries that are really holding them back. They don't feel like they're quite in the right headspace for everything, and we've seen a couple of really bad results, not just in the Champions League but in La Liga as well, kind of go against them in situations you'd expect them to be finding their way out of. So it's not been great from their perspective. They did score their first goal in the Champions League in this campaign, which was Gurveta after some very weird Borussia Dortmund defending, which was probably, you know, the only mark, as I say, you know, a couple of black marks on books tonight. That was the only real negative for Borussia Dortmund, because they looked brilliant for so much of this. And Karim Adeyemi is on a tear at the moment, and he's kind of the man setting the tone, setting the tempo.
I think he's got faster.
He has got faster. He's like borderline unplayable when he's playing like this. He sets up the first goal, brilliant drive down the flank, and he picks out a perfect cross for Svensson, who fires it home for the opener. But at that moment, it's like, oh, what are Borussia Dortmund going to go do here? The Westfalenstadion very much firmly behind them at the moment. But you know, they get into half time, it's 1-0, and you're thinking, okay, we know what Borussia Dortmund are like. We don't trust them in situations because of the history of what Borussia Dortmund have been like. But they're trying their very, very best to dissolve that ideal, I think. Chukwuemeka scores his first Champions League goal, a really good footwork, and then a lovely finish at the near post as well to set them 2-0 up. And you're thinking, wow, okay, they could really lay the hammer down here on this Athletic Club side that look a little bit all over the place, that having to make wholesale changes, you know, in various points at the moment. Oh yeah, Sunset on the bench for this one. Iñaki started, but no Nico Williams. Then Dortmund do the sort of Dortmund thing and shoot themselves in the foot. Like, just don't clear a ball, like whack it into each other in the box, and it falls for Gurveta to fire home. And you're thinking, oh God, here we go again, especially after what happened last week from a Dortmund perspective. But they don't collapse. And Gyasi scores in the 82nd minute. Gyasi scores is probably a little bit of an overstatement. If you think the Voltimada did the Newcastle one on purpose, I can take that. But I don't think anyone thinks that Gyasi did this one.
Okay.
It cannons off him and beats the keeper and gives him a bit of breathing space. And then Julian Brandt, who comes off the bench, scores an excellent, excellent fourth to, you know, again at the near post. And maybe you'd have to look at that from an Athletic perspective. Unai Simon not covering himself in glory in this moment here. But it was a really well put together and comprehensive performance from Borussia Dortmund. And Niko Kovac is doing some really clever things at the moment. Now, I've talked a bit about the fact that the front three of Borussia Dortmund for a little while has been Adeyemi and Gyasi and Maxi Bayer. And they have the ability to tear people apart with the amount of pace and sheer quickness in that front three. Like, just really opens up games. But actually what he did here was play Chukwuemeka as one of the advanced three. It gave Joe Bellingham a little bit more cover in the midfield, which I think was important in just making sure that he's a little bit protected. There's a little bit of criticism going his way at the moment as well. And Sabitzer are just there to hold it all together. The two fullbacks in Rice and Svensson, I think, work really nicely together. There's a real fullback to fullback combination going on from that respect. And look, at the moment, it feels like they're just being careful with Nico Schlotterbeck. He comes off the bench here. Valdemar Anton feels like the kind of rock in the defensive line. Ben Sabaini is playing gorgeously at left centre back as well. And they're just being careful with Schlotterbeck. Niklas Süle getting some reps as well, just to make sure that everything's fine. Obviously, a very experienced player at this point. But Dortmund look really, really good. They look really comprehensive. Kovac is making some smart moves from a tactical perspective to just protect certain players and make sure that they're not overcommitting in games like this, especially when they know how well Athletic can play in transition. Adding an extra body in there in Chukwuemeka, who can play in the front three, sure, but also can drop into that midfield to give a little bit of extra toughness if they need it. It just worked beautifully. And the Westfalenstadion would have been a very, very happy place tonight after a very, very big win.
Oh, yeah.
Shouts out to Borussia Dortmund.
Another very good win.
Indeed, indeed. Talking of cool stadiums, the Maradona, Napoli 2, Sporting 1. Dean, 2 assists for Kevin De Bruyne, 2 goals for Rasmus Højlund against Amorim and Hugo Viana's old side. This one made in Manchester, and 2 very different goals as well, which I think was the interesting thing. First one, very, very pure De Bruyne, like shrugs off a couple of challenges. He beats a couple of players in midfield and slides it through for Højlund. Like the goal you expected Højlund to score a host of. But the second one, De Bruyne drifting out to the left-hand side and whipping in a perfect cross. And so brave from Rasmus Højlund to get in front of the goalkeeper and flick it over him. He gets punched in the head while it happens. That's a man hungry to kind of prove a lot of people wrong. And it's working really, really nicely from a Napoli perspective. I think you have to score first against them if you're going to go and beat them. Obviously, it's something that Milan managed at the weekend. And when they are having to come out of their shell a little bit and press a little bit more, Napoli feel a little bit more... they're there for the taking. And to be honest, Sporting, to their credit, hung into this game. And in one of their first real second half forays, they won and converted a penalty equaliser. Luis Suarez, not that one, making sure from the spot. And at that point, you were like, oh, how are Napoli going to respond to this? Because they've had the lead for such a big period of the game. They haven't been able to, you know, see off. And it's stupid from Politano to give away the penalty. It's really kind of naive from a player of his experience. But they find a way. And we know what Conte's record in European football is like. We know that this is a competition that he hasn't done particularly well in down the years. But Napoli feel like they've got a real bit of fire and fight in them at the moment. And, you know, despite the fact that they lost at the weekend in Serie A to Milan and opened up that conversation of kind of who's going to cope best with the strains of the season, having different elements of that on them. I thought they bounced back really nicely here. This was a big win against a well put together Sporting side. And they, you know, took full advantage of the opportunity given to them at the end. Højlund looks like he's fitting in like a glove. And I don't think everyone was expecting that, should we say.
No, I think he enjoyed that one, didn't he? He's on a mission to prove that he's not done. And I think that he will do that. Like, he's not a bad player. He just needs to recapture his confidence. Like, I really didn't think that Højlund was a bad signing when Man United. In fact, I loved the signing of Højlund when Man United made him, because I thought you got a proper nine there, a proper poacher, an instinctive goal scorer. And he got caught up in the culture of Man United and it's threatened his career. And now he's going to fix it in Italy. And it's a good start. It's a good start.
Yeah, it very much is. Very much is a good start. Right, 2 more games. First one, Karabag 2, Copenhagen 0 in one of the early kickoffs. Look, I enjoyed watching Karabag in the Europa League last season. I thought they were a much better side than they were given credit for. But I cannot believe how impressive they've been in the Champions League so far. Obviously, that comeback win over Benfica, setting them on their way, and then winning their first game at home as well. They are one of just a couple of teams on 6 points after the opening 2 match days, which is pretty stunning at this point. And this performance against Copenhagen was really impressive. Kaschuk was excellent again. Andrade was excellent again, but it was Zubir who scores the goal in the first half this time, you know, after the other 2 kind of came to the fore in that game against Benfica. And they finish it late on with a goal from Emmanuel Adai, who comes off the bench. And to be honest, looked like a real live wire, like a very, very exciting player to watch. He scores an absolute screamer to make it 2-0. Look, as much as I praise Karabag, and rightly so, they've defended for their lives at times in this game. And I thought the way that they were able to turn it around against Benfica, even if that was Bruno Lage's final game in charge of the club, was incredibly impressive. You know, you would expect a side from Azerbaijan, seen as one of the rank outsiders of the competition, 2-0 down away from home at one of the great stadiums of Europe, to wilt a little bit. They showed no sign of that in the game against Benfica. And they showed no signs of wilting here either. That said, Copenhagen will feel a little bit hard done by losing this one. They had a host of chances to equalize at 1-0, and then they get stung late with the second. They hit the bar a couple of times. There's a couple that sort of like slide agonizingly past players rolling in at the far post to tap them in. It didn't quite work out in the state they won, and then they got punished. They didn't perform badly. But I think that, you know, what's so impressive about Qarabağ is the fact that they're just able to take their chances. They're able to make the most of their opportunities. And look, if I'd said to you that they would have won 2 from 2, I think people would have laughed at me. And I would have laughed at me, because that step up, as much as you can be good in the Europa League, you know, the step up to the Champions League is a different step up. Now, obviously, Benfica and Copenhagen are not the hardest two fixtures on their fixture list, but these are the kind of games you need to win if you're going to put yourself in a position to even make the kind of playoff round. And they're doing exactly what's needed of them. So absolutely fair play. I think that, you know, Gurbanov's side have really, really put together another impressive campaign so far. After what happened last year, you know, no one is going to go and play them, because especially at home, they've put together a real kind of fearlessness and an ability to go at teams. And it undid some really big sides in the Europa League and in the last couple of seasons. I remember Braga going there and being stunned by what Qarabağ were able to put together in certain games. But they've carried that into this competition, and that no fear attitude is something that is great to see from a team who Manny had kind of written off as one of the bottom eight before a ball was kicked.
Yeah, well done, mate. I mean, look, these games only finished like less than an hour and a half ago, and we've just done a 1 hour pod, and you've managed to review most of the games. So your game watching ability does still not get enough respect, sir. So well done, Jack, for feeding us through all of those, because that's been pretty wild that you've been able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, there is one last game that I haven't touched on.
Which one? Which one have we forgotten?
It was the dullest game of the night, so thus it feels right to have it last.
Oh, I genuinely thought we were done. I just went through the list and I thought, oh, that's got to be it now. Go on.
We've missed Leverkusen. I missed PSV, which ended 1-1 in Leverkusen, and it was a really poor game, if I'm honest. It was the one that drew my attention the least. Leverkusen ended up scoring the opener after some absolutely dreadful PSV defending. Great moment for Christian Cufane, though. I think 19 years old, I believe. His first start in the Champions League, and it really was poor defending, but he took advantage of it. He seemed even shocked by it. He took this extra touch that he didn't need to take. And it was almost like he was like, hang on, someone just give me the ball 6 yards out. Like, I was going to have to slot this home, aren't I? But it was a great celebration and a really nice moment for him. So shout out to Christian Cufane taking advantage of the opportunity afforded to him. PSV actually scored a very, very good equaliser in this one. Gus Till, who was playing as sort of the false nine in this PSV side, picked out Ismail Sabari, who I still think is an absolutely sensational player, who finished with aplomb, shall we say. There was an early goal ruled out from a PSV perspective. Perisic was pretty comfortably offside. Dennis Mann with a great cross, though. Perisic didn't need to be offside, but he was. And Grimaldo hit the post from a Leverkusen perspective. He kind of drilled down that left-hand side and from a ridiculous angle fired one towards goal. And it was actually inches away from curling inside the near post. It would have been an incredible goal to add to his list of incredible goals. But it does feel like Leverkusen are getting better. They haven't lost a game yet under Kasper Hjulmand, although they haven't won the ones that you'd perhaps expect them to a little bit more. But it's been a better and a more cohesive start. It feels like they're still kind of experimenting a little bit with the side and the formation and how everyone fits together. But honours even, shall we say, in the Malik Tillman derby.
Well done, mate. Well done. Yeah. Thanks for filling us in on the game that we didn't know we needed to know about.
No, didn't. You didn't need to know about that one. That was the one you can avoid if you need to go back and watch the highlights. Not much to report. Wow.
Are you ready to do it all again tomorrow? Because we've got a Patreon show to record tomorrow, and we're going to start looking forward to the weekend already. So you're going to have a day of watching Europa Conference, Europa League, and getting stuck into what's coming at the weekend, when we're going to be talking about Chelsea, Liverpool, Dortmund, Leipzig, Juve, Milan. We've got Patron of the Week predictions, and we'll probably look back on some of the action that we somehow have missed out so far this week. So are you ready for that?
Yeah, well, we'll be ready. I can't promise that I will have, you know, coverage of all 18 games across the course of the Europa League tomorrow. But I will do my best to keep abreast of all of the action in my two favourite competitions. So more to look forward to, which leaves us at the end of this podcast. All that's left for me to do is say a massive thank you to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate. And up the Padres. Goes to game 3. Here we go. I might not actually be around tomorrow to record, mate. This is a big day. Leave my baseball supporting life.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one. It's going to be a big one. We might have to do some of it early. Do it in a couple of parts to make sure it all goes out.
Who knows? Yeah.
You might have to do it from a pole. This is the kind of thing you can look forward to if you come and join us over on the Patreon. We'd love to have you. The link, as ever, is in the description. I've been Jack Collins. Thank you so much, all of you, for listening to Champions League Takeaway. And we'll see you all very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.